This is Evolutionary Radio. This is your host, Trevor Caritzen. Joining me, as always, my loyal and faithful co-host, Steve Smee.
How you guys doing?
We also got the Mason in the house. Matt, how you doing?
I'm fantastic. Ready for another really nice show we got planned here. A lot of questions.
Just got home from hockey practice, hey?
Yeah, that's why I know you guys can't see, but that's why I'm wearing a hat. I got the full-on helmet head going right now.
Okay. Oh, you actually play hockey. I thought you were driving your kids.
Yeah, no, I coach, so I'm on the ice.
Okay. Are you one of those coaches who just wears the helmet and the gloves, or do you put on all the get-up?
Yeah, no, just helmet, gloves, skates.
Helmet, gloves, skates. Okay, cool. Steve, how are you doing? How's the Florida situation?
Well, they didn't hit me directly. We had 60, 65-mile-an-hour sustained winds, and the strongest gust was 91. So we had a lot of tree damage. A lot of people don't have power. That's nothing like shit's like closed and it sucks. Like, you know, like stores are closed and shit. So, and like supermarkets barely have any food and everyone's miserable out there. Like traffic lights, half the traffic lights don't work. Everyone's like charging their phones like at the supermarket and stuff using plugs because they don't have power at home. It's like 95 degrees, you know, so you got no air conditioning. So you can imagine everyone's miserable right now.
What about your house? Any damage or anything like that?
Well, like I said, Trevor, we had 60 to 65 sustained winds. So that's not going to damage a house. But which is going to cause a lot of tree damage. In Florida, when you build a house, it has to have a certain it has to be able to withstand a certain amount of wind. So the winds that we got are not going to cause damage to homes, but they are going to cause tree damage. So we had a lot of tree damage that caused a lot of power, you know, power issues. So a lot of power lines are knocked over because of the trees. So.
Gotcha. I mean, like, you have to remember, Steve, like, I know nothing about this stuff. Like, we're here in Canada. I'm in the prairies. Like, we get zero wind here. Like, it's like as still as can be. So, I mean, like.
Yeah. Well, you guys get tornadoes and stuff. But, yeah, I mean, it's. Like, you have to imagine 60, 65-mile sustained wind. Unless you live, like, in a fucking trailer or something, you're not going to have any damage. So, I mean, if you have, like, a concrete home, you see what I'm saying? So anything over, like, 100 sustained winds, you'll start getting roof damage, glass shattering, stuff like that. So we didn't get the brunt of the storm, but the islands in the Caribbean got wiped out. The Keys, they got the storm surge, and then like Southwest Florida had a lot of wind. So Southwest Florida, like some counties over there, like 90%.
So I went to Cuba last year in, I want to say it was January, February maybe, and the resort we went to and the airport is gone. Like, wow. In Cuba right now, there's one airport to get to Cayo Coco, which is basically like north of mainland Cuba. It's like a set of keys. There's one airport there and it's gone. Literally, it's demolished to nothing.
Yeah, the island, Barbuda, I think it was called, 95% of the structures got wiped out. And we're talking, they got hit by 200-mile-an-hour wind. So if you get hit by 200-mile wind, that's like being in an F4, F5 tornado. So I know, Trevor, you're like, oh, we don't have this. You guys have some big fucking tornadoes up there in fucking the boonies of Canada. So if you just imagine if your house got hit by an F4, F5 tornado, what it would do, it would wipe your house off the foundation. So that's the kind of winds that they got hit with over there. So compare that with 60-mile-an-hour wind, it's not even close. You know what I'm saying?
Steve, the weatherman. Okay, thank you. So we got six great topics for you guys. Our first topic is flexibility, stretching, yoga, Pilates, things like that. Steve, I'll let you go first. Do you any sort of like yoga, Pilates, stretching?
I started doing yoga when I was probably like 20 or 21. And I started doing a lot of stretching when I was back in high school. because when we, you know, we play sports, all the coaches, like football, soccer, whatever, we would always warm up with stretching. You know, that's like the standard protocol, whatever. So that's when I started doing stretching. I started doing yoga in my 20s. Started really getting deep into yoga like in my mid-20s, where I started going to classes and stuff. The gyms, I've been to yoga classes in gyms. I've done hot yoga. Right now, what I started doing, I started getting back into hot yoga because my my doctor actually told me, which is really weird because you wouldn't think that Western doctors would actually tell you to do yoga. But he actually told me, he's like, look, he's like, do hot yoga because it's gonna help stretch. It's going to help detox. It's going to get, you know, your flexibility better. I started doing hot yoga. The amazing thing about hot yoga, all right, guys, is that you're going to be able to overstretch. And the stretches that I've been able to do since I got back into hot yoga the past few weeks, I'm amazed because I would never be able to stretch like this just under normal circumstances. But when you're in a room that's hot like that and you got the peer pressure of everyone else around you doing these stretches, you're able to do them. Like I was able to do the camel stretch, and you can look this up, and I was like, I can't imagine ever being able to do this. The stretch was actually I was able to do it in hot yoga because you're in a heated room, so your muscles can kind of overstretch. And let me tell you something, after hot yoga for like 3 days, you're sore in places that you wouldn't believe because it stretches out certain areas that it overstretches areas. So your kind of muscles get like this overstretching. So it's been a really awesome for me to do this. Plus you're in a room pretty much with 90 or 95% hot, sweaty women in their underwear. So there's nothing better to do hot yoga. I highly recommend it.
One thing about hot yoga is I really like hot yoga. It has a lot of health benefits, not just the stretching, but also, you know, sweating, you know, profusely like that is great for detoxifying the body. What Steve said though is 100% correct. You know, if this is your first time ever doing hot yoga, be very careful and almost like leave a little bit in the tank because you can overstretch. And a lot of people, you know, their first or second hot yoga class will actually pull their groin or something like that because your body becomes so flexible in that warm, hot environment that you can actually pull something pretty easily.
Yeah,
so
that's what I did actually. You hit the nail on the head. I actually pulled my groin was hurting for like 4 days.
Was there like a smoking hot housewife like right beside you and you're really...
Actually, this fucking guy was in front of me at like a gut. This dude was dripping sweat. Like he was getting into like dangerous heat exhaustion. Like he couldn't even, he lasted about 10 minutes of the class. The rest of the class, he just laid there. Like yeah. He was sweating so much. If you're going to do hot yoga, guys, please hydrate properly. A really good tip is cream of tartar. Put some cream and tartar in your water with salt, just a little bit of salt, because you're going to lose so much fluids during the hot yoga. You can end up getting heat exhaustion like that guy was in front of me. He sweat out so fucking much that I wanted to tell him, I'm like, dude, you gotta get out of here and you got to go get some salt back in your system, some potassium, some magnesium, because he was literally like, it's dangerous. Like if you're not hydrating properly, like and you're not in good shape, you can end up in deep trouble doing it. So please be careful and be smart.
Steve, the salt I get, but why the cream of tartar? I've never heard of that before.
Potassium.
Oh, okay.
It's got a shitload of potassium in it. And the guy was actually drinking a lot of coconut water. He kept telling the lady coconut water, so she'd go get him coconut water. And I wanted to tell him, dude, you're creating a fucking dangerous imbalance because you're getting a lot of potassium from the coconut water, but no salt because the coconut water doesn't have salt. And then he was drinking water, tons of water in coconut water, and there's no salt coming back, and he's sweating out all the salt. So that's what I'm saying. Cream of tartar, like half a tablespoon in your water and half a tablespoon and maybe half a teaspoon of salt. So you get that balance to your electrolytes. That's going to really help you hydrate during your hot yoga.
Coconut water is also fairly high in calories. And I mean, if he was like an overweight guy, he was probably doing the class trying to lose weight. So I mean,
yeah.
Kind of counterproductive because he's just lying there and drinking all these calories.
It was so bad. It was disgusting. Like his sweat was coming on to like my area. It was, it was just a bad situation. You got no business being in that class. You got to get yourself into some type of decent shape before doing hot yoga. It's no joke, all right? Go to, you know, it's people think hot yoga or yoga is, like, easy. It is fucking hard. Like, I barely survived it. Like, so you really got to be in decent shape.
I'll give my tip, then we'll let Matt go. I love yoga. I think it's great. I'm all for yoga. I give it my highest recommendations. It's just something I don't do. I just don't have the time. You know, I know that's an excuse and you can say, well, you should make the time for it. But I mean, we all have 24 hours in a day. And I mean, just between my own university courses, between work, you know, my TAing schedule, my own training, it's just one thing I haven't found time to fit into my schedule. So what I do is I kind of mimic hot yoga. Basically, after your workout, your muscles are warm, your body temperature is warm. I stretch for 20 minutes after every workout, and it's kind of the same thing as a hot yoga class almost, because like you're warm, you're loose. That's the best time to stretch. Stretching before your workout will actually decrease strength. So you want to do dynamic warm-ups before your dynamic stretching before your workout. So that'd be, you know, things like walking lunges, kettlebell swings, things that are going to increase flexibility, but not something that you would, you know, take and hold. And then after your workout, that's when you want to do static stretching. That's when, you know, you would have a stretch, hold it for 90 seconds, go to the next stretch, hold it for 90 seconds. So before your workout, static stretching, you know, that's things where you're moving, you know, great things are like arm circles, you know, things you see people doing in the gym all the time. And then after your workout, that's when you do the static stretching. Matt, what are your thoughts on this topic?
Well, so just quickly, Steve, the recipe that Steve just gave you guys, that's basically a healthy version of Gatorade, right? It's your electrolytes minus all the sugar. So that's a great substitute you can use if you're going for a long run, even something like that. But for me, I haven't really done much yoga or anything like that. But what I do is I'm a huge fan of stretching. So I had a teacher, the school I went to in grades 6, 7, and 8, I had him in 8. And everybody's had that one teacher that they like to teach life skills to, that they're just like way ahead of their time. And this is one of those guys. He was teaching us that we should start stretching every day. And this is at a young age, right? So I always, you know, had that in my mind. And I need to stretch because I'm shorter, I'm bulkier, and I need that to be flexible. I don't have those long limbs. It's just the way that I'm built. So what I like to do is I like to stretch for about 15 minutes right when I wake up, just to get everything nice and loose for my day. I will always stretch after a workout and then always right before going to bed. Because think about it, when you sleep, you're going to basically be laying still for about 6 to 8 hours. So it's nice to get things loosened up before you do that. Now, when you're actually doing a stretch, the biggest mistake I see people doing is they stretch it too far. It shouldn't be uncomfortable. You should be able to hold your stretch for minimum 20 seconds with no problem. I really like sometimes to get into a nice stretch and hold it for like a minute. It feels awesome. So no matter what you're doing, just get to where you're comfortable and just stay there, because you really can put yourself at risk for pulling a muscle if you do stretch it too far. So that's kind of what I do to stay flexible.
I'll say one more thing, then we'll move into our second topic. What Matt says is completely right. A lot of people, they hold a stretch for like 10 seconds. You're just wasting your time. You know, to actually lengthen that muscle, you know, you're going to want to hold that stretch at least 30 seconds, you know, ideally 60, 90, 120 seconds. And it should feel good. You know, if a stretch doesn't feel good, that's a mistake. You know, it should feel almost like relaxing. You know, that muscle should be elongating. It should be a nice stretch. It should almost be like a form of meditation. I didn't know you stretched so much, Matt. Good job. Kudos to you. You're the breadwinner of the podcast so far. So our second topic is beef protein supplements. These have recently started to come on the market. When they first came on the market, I actually thought it was a meme. I thought it was a joke. You know, I thought someone was kind of talking about like, you know, like you hear these age-old tales of people would, you know, blend tuna and make like tuna shakes. I thought someone was joking. I thought they were actually joking, like, hey, like a beef protein shake. I thought they were like, you know, joking about like blending up beef. But no, you can actually buy beef protein. Long story short of it, they use gelatin. Gelatin is an incomplete protein source. It doesn't have all the essential amino acids, has a very, very low amino acid profile. It's basically garbage. The reason these companies are making these supplements is because they're cheap. Gelatin's like a tenth of the cost of whey protein. So they basically are making a flavored gelatin product. The nice thing about gelatin is it doesn't really taste like anything. So it's really easy to flavor. It mixes instantly with water. It's dirt cheap. And then the naive consumer is basically, oh, beef protein. This is new. This is cool. I'll use this. And they buy it. Or, you know, now people are eliminating dairy from their diet. So they see beef protein and they go, oh, it's paleo. And yeah. So basically, in my opinion, save your money. If you want to use beef, eat beef. If you want to use a protein supplement, use a whey protein isolate. Don't fix what is broken. Let's let Matt go and let Steve go.
Yeah, beef supplement, like beef protein powders are terrible. And the reason why is not only gelatin, but they'll use tendons and collagen and ligaments. Like these are the parts that they're using. And then because there is such a terrible amino profile, they just add BCAAs and different amino acids to it. So that's how they're able to market it, that, you know, it has certain amino acids and everything else. So if you were to actually, you know, it's funny, but the whole idea of the tuna shake, and if you ground up meat, you know what, that would actually be effective, but it would be disgusting. If you were to actually price it out and make a beef powder that was actually made from meat, it would be around $200 a pound. So think about that when you go buy your 4 to 5 pound protein tub. It would cost you $800 to $1,000 to consume that tub, if that's what it was. So what these companies are able to do is they're able to charge more than a whey protein because it's the next big thing, right? So it's innovation. They're charging for that. So you're paying more for a product that, in my opinion, is far inferior to a pure whey protein isolate. So I would stay away from it. Honestly, I would much rather see you guys look to plant-based proteins if you, you know, cannot eat dairy or you can't have lactose. Instead of going for the beef, go for the like a pea protein or a hemp protein. That's going to be a lot better in my opinion. So I am not a fan. And also I did quickly look up one of the more popular beef proteins out there. And although it had zero carbs, zero fat, it did have 8 grams of carbs per scoop. So that's something you really want to be aware of. Any good quality whey isolate is only going to have, you know, maybe 1 gram of carbs. So you're better off to, you know, stick with that and just make sure you read your labels too.
Have you guys tried pea protein or hemp protein or any of those other proteins?
Yeah, it has a very, very weird texture to it, almost like chalk, and most of them taste horrible. The ones that do taste good have a lot of oils and sugars added to them. An unflavored vegan protein is pretty bad. It's like I'm not picky, and it's hard for me to stomach. If you mix it in like oatmeal or something like that, then, you know, it's easier. But I mean, just mixed in water, it's pretty rough.
I had a good pea protein. It was just vanilla, but it did have carbs. I want to say it had about 15 grams of carbs per serving. So that's probably what made it okay. But no, it's different if you're not used to it.
15 grams, I mean, that's a lot, Matt, right? Like, because you probably need about 2 scoops to hit your protein requirements. That's 30 grams of carbs. I mean, that's a bowl of oatmeal right there, right? So, I mean, like, if you're, again, it depends on your goals. Like, if you're bulking, like, you don't really care. But, I mean, if you're trying to cut, that's 30 grams of carbs per day that you're taking that you're not even, like, eating. You know what I mean? Like, a bowl of oatmeal you'd actually feel satiated from. But that's 30 grams of carbs doing nothing for you. So, anyway, Steve, I'll let you finish.
Yeah, I'm just, you know, I haven't really, they're really the only shakes I mix up are like a greens powder, personally. And I wonder with the greens powder how effective it is in terms of, you know, getting your nutrition. I will say I don't mind the taste of a greens powder at all. There's so many people that try it. I haven't had one person try the greens powder and like, wow, this tastes good. They all say it tastes horrible, but I like the taste. And I wonder if that's a signal right there that, you know, that it's actually healthy. And I'm a type of person that I'm not like addicted to like all this other crap that people are, like soda and sugars and all this shit.
Do you know why that is, Steve?
Huh?
Do you know why, like when you taste something that isn't very sweet, you know, you'll find it sweet where the other, when someone else will be like, oh, that's not near sweet enough. Do you know why that is?
Tell me why.
Your taste buds actually change constantly.
Yeah.
It's not like people think like we have these taste buds and they're like these like static things on your tongue that, you know, like are there. No. Like they're constantly being regenerated. And as a survival mechanism, your taste buds change to crave whatever foods you normally eat. Because, you know, prehistoric human, if all you had access to was, you know, like some bitter berry, they would want you that to, you know, taste good to you because that was the only food you had available. So if you constantly eat sweet foods, you crave sweet foods. If you constantly eat bitter foods, you crave bitter foods. You know, and like me, I can eat a lemon just like almost like it's an orange, you know? And for me, it tastes good, but someone else would be like, oh, that's so bitter. But that's because, you know, I don't eat normally sweet foods, so I don't crave sweets. And what's really true is that whole addicted to sugar thing, that's scientifically 100% correct. And it's going to take you about 3 weeks of eliminating sugar from your diet for your taste buds to change. So you kick that habit. But it's actually 100% true. Like anyone who's overweight and says they're addicted to sugar, they're not lying to you. It's actually been medically proven. It's just as bad as like cigarette addiction.
Yeah, well, it's funny because they actually, they'll drink whey protein. And I'll be like, yeah, whey protein, this tastes good. So, you know, it's interesting. It makes you wonder, but whey protein does have way more calories than a greens powder. So it is something to really think about, like, you know, in terms of nutrition. But, you know, it's hard to really say, has this made a difference in my life? I would say, like, I'm not really sure if it has, but I will say that, you know, real vegetables, like eating real green vegetables over a greens powder is going to be way more healthier than eating a fucking greens powder. Like, even if you're getting the same amount of vitamins and minerals, I just don't see it. Like, as someone like who's actually experienced both the things, like I literally just started using a greens powder maybe a year or two ago. But before that, I was eating way more green vegetables than I am now. But I would say like eating more green vegetables is definitely, in my experience, better than drinking a greens powder all day. So definitely, no matter what you do in terms of whether it's protein powders, greens, whatever, real food beats, you know, mixing up powder and drinking it. Like in my
Steve, let me ask you a question quick. Because obviously when you're eating raw vegetables, you're getting a ton of fiber. Do they add fiber to the greens supplement that you have, or is that something they typically do? Because I don't have a greens powder, and I would think unless they do, you'd be, you know, somebody that doesn't eat vegetables and only takes the powder would be seriously lacking fiber.
I know they do, because I know they have fruit, like pieces of fruit added into the powder. So I'm assuming that would be
usually fiber. Matt, the greens powders that they have in the product have fiber in them. So they don't actually add a fiber source, but the product will have a couple grams of fiber just from the greens themselves. Cause they basically use like powdered wheatgrass and barley grass and things like that. So, you know, a 10 gram scoop will have around 2 to 3 grams of fiber. But yeah, I mean, Steve hit the nail on the coffin here. I mean, even if you could make a high quality beef protein, what do you think your body's going to absorb better? You know, a fresh piece of beef that, you know, you just picked up from the farmer's market, you know, that was butchered a week before, or some powder that's been sitting on a shelf for 2 years that you're reconstituting with water. So yeah, we got four more topics. We only got half an hour. This episode is flying by. So, Steve, I'll let you answer this question. What is the difference between Deca and Trenbolone? So, hit it, man. You're the guru.
Well, we had a guy today. He was trying to make a decision on what he should run, Tren or Deca. And really, you know, people who ask these questions, it's nobody's job to kind of like spoon feed you like, hey, you should run this, you should run that. Unless you hire like a coach or something who is going to spoon feed you this stuff. But really, you have to make the decision. You have to look at both the compounds, learn about them inside and out, and then make a decision what you want to run. But there isn't like a law that says you must run either Deca or Tren. Why not run, pick one to run this time, and then next go around, do the other one and see what you like better. Experiment, you know? So I never really understood why people come on forums and ask questions like this when steroids are not that hard to get a hold of. They're not that expensive. Just get both and run one and then run the other next time. But what is the difference between the two? You know, if you're going to do like, look at it at a big perspective, Deca is a mild compound with low side effects and it's got a very long ester, you know, and then Tren is kind of the opposite. It's very, very androgenic. It's got extremely high side effects. It's very inflammatory in the body and it's got a shorter ester. You got Tren E, which is an NFA ester, and you have Tren A's, which is a very, very short ester. The Decan A ester is very, very long, 15, 16 days. So you're comparing that with E, which is about 10 and a half days, or the ACE, which is like, what, 3 days. So, you know, it's what you want to decide. Also, you know, Tren, a lot of people are like, oh, they're going to run Tren for 12 weeks or 14 weeks. I mean, for me, in my experience, 8 weeks is fucking plenty on Tren because you get sick of this shit. Once you hit like 6-7 weeks, you're like, fuck, I can't wait to get off this shit because it just fucking is so fucking annoying, you know? The side effects get on your fucking nerves. With Deca, you can run Deca much longer, you know, and it's got way less side effects. It's not going to like destroy your hair. It's not going to give you this crazy ass heart strain. It's not going to give you these androgenic side effects. You know, it's not going to give you the insomnia, the, you know, the trensomnia. It's not going to make you sweat. It's not going to, like, you know, make your pee turn brown because of the metabolites and because it's always causing you to be dehydrated all the time. It's going to increase your mood, while Tren is going to make you feel like an asshole. You're going to get more aggressive on Tren. So, you know, they couldn't be any more different compounds. So really it boils down to, you know, what your goals are. I mean, if you want to, like, you know, really take shit to the next level and you want to do something that's going to work quick, then, you know, run the Tren. But if you want to do something where you're going to be patient, it's got low side effects, you can run it a long time, and, you know, then go with the Deca. Deca isn't going to shed your hair. It's not going to strain your heart. It's not going to cause your cholesterol levels to go crazy. It's going to, you know, it's totally different. So it really boils down to, you know, what you want and your goals. Someone like Matt just ran Tren, and he can talk a little bit about it, you know, and see, you know, what he thought about it.
Matt, chime in a little bit on your experience.
Yeah. It's definitely way, way, way different than Deca. The one thing I would say with Tren too is if you want to be dry, if you want to look dry and not retain water, it's a great one to run. But don't add in like 750 milligrams of test per week, because that's going to just put the water on and it's going to negate the effect you could get by running Tren. So if you're going to run it, I found, you know, keep your test dose, if you're going to run test with it, moderate to low. Don't go crazy with it. You'll just add a ton of side effects if you run it too high. Where Deca is a little bit different, you're going to have some water weight from Deca anyways. So it's okay to have a little bit more test because it's just kind of something you're going to deal with. But if you're looking for that dry look, you know, just keep that in mind. I think with this question, if you're asking that question, my general assumption would be that that's probably somebody that hasn't run a ton of cycles and doesn't have a lot of experience. So I would really want that person before they run something like Tren to know what they're getting into and to probably have enough experience. So if you're asking that, you probably should run the DECA first would be my guess. And then lead into the Tren down the road. Now, I agree with what Steve said. It is an animal when you run it, and you will be annoyed at times. I was one of those guys. I planned to run it 12 weeks last time, and it didn't happen because I wanted to sleep again. I didn't want to wake up like dripping wet. I had enough of that. So you can get a ton out of it, even running a long ester for 8 weeks. Like it's serious. If you got everything locked in, if you have your diet right and your training is right, it will do a ton for you. If you expect it to do all the work and you slack off on your diet or your training, it's not going to do shit for you, and you're going to have terrible side effects and you're going to hate it. So that's why it's definitely for a more advanced user. You got to have everything. You know you're going to run it properly. You know there's no chance you're going to just screw off mid-cycle like too many people do.
I think the whole water retention thing from DECA is overblown. After our last episode, where we talked about DECA Dick, one of my clients, we started doing a DECA, Primo, and Proviron cycle. He's using mild AI and cabergoline as an anti-prolactin drug. And he is dry as can be. I mean, he's super lean too, but I would say no water retention whatsoever. So I think, you know, that whole DECA water retention, I think people kind of throw the baby out with the bathwater with that whole thing because, you know, they're running like test and D-ball with it, which are both really, you know, estrogenic and very wet compounds. So I think DECA by itself, it doesn't really aromatase. So I don't think you'll have too much of water retention from it. But whenever it comes to a question like, is this better than that? Neither is better. They're different. So what I would recommend is go on evolutionary.org, go in the steroid profile section, read, you know, the in-depth 20-page profile on DECA, read the in-depth 20-page profile on Tren, learn all about the drug, the anabolic and androgenic ratings, the side effects you might experience, blah, 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 and then pick, because, you know, it's not that one's better, it's just that they're different. So our next topic is the best time to do cardio for fat loss. I'll hit it, and then we'll let Matt go, and we'll let Steve go. You know, scientifically speaking, you could argue that the best time to do cardio is, you know, first thing in the morning on an empty stomach. First thing in the morning on an empty stomach, you have an eight, you know, for 8 to 10 hours, depending on how long you slept, when dinner was, yada, yada, yada. So your glycogen levels, which is basically how much carbs are stored in your muscle and your liver, are going to be low. Because your glycogen levels are low, your body is going to have to burn body fat as a fuel source. Honestly, though, from a real world sense, it doesn't matter. I mean, get the cardio in. In my opinion, it's kind of worrying about, like, should I brush my teeth and then floss, or should I floss and then brush my teeth? You know, if you're doing both, your dentist is going to give you a high five and say, hey, man, awesome job. Keep it up. So I really don't think it matters that much. And, you know, every single scientific study I've read, they saw no difference in fat loss if, you know, someone did the cardio fast or they ate a small meal beforehand. I don't think, you know, eating a bunch of carbs before doing the cardio would be a smart idea, because then your body's just going to burn those carbs you ate. But I mean, like, let's say it just works for best for your schedule to do, you know, cardio on your lunch break rather than get up early. You know, what I would do for breakfast is have, you know, a breakfast high in fat, high in protein, no carbs, and then hit the cardio at lunch. I personally feel that it'll be just as effective in terms of fat loss as if you did it on an empty stomach. Matt, what are your thoughts?
So I have three ways that I do cardio. I would say just in general, the best time to do it is when you have time to do it. Any cardio is better than no cardio. So I agree that I don't think any time is going to necessarily be better than the other. So the three ways that I do cardio is in the winter time when it's icy, I don't like to run outside because I just feel like I'm going to snap an ankle. So I will do cardio immediately after my workout because I'm already at the gym. It's nothing to just take an extra half hour, and it allows me to think, and it's peaceful. The other time is when it's not that I'm going to blow my ankle off, and I like to run outside. It's calming for me. I enjoy that time. It's, you know, time that I can just reflect on things. And the third time, and this is something that I'll throw in here and there, I'll actually do it between every single set. So I could vary it, but I'll basically carry around like a little stepper with me. And between every set, I'll get off and I'll do, say, a minute of just up and down as fast as I can go. And then I go right into my next set. So throughout my entire workout, you know, if I'm doing, you know, three sets of an exercise, after those three sets are done, now I've already done 3 minutes of cardio. So by the time my, you know, workout's done, not only am I training at a really high pace, but I'm also getting those little, you know, intervals in between each set. So those are, that's the three ways that I do it. And I enjoy all of them.
I think it's a beautiful thing. If you can get in 20 to 30 minutes a day of just some jogging, you can just go and jog, or even just go jog a mile every day. Can you do that? Can you just get up in the morning, or, you know, in the evening, maybe, you know, when you have a time, just run a mile, you know, that'd be a beautiful thing. The health benefits to your heart will be tremendous. You'll burn calories, and in turn, you'll lose body fat, and you'll be able to, you know, eat a little more food without getting fat in the process. So try to set a goal to do that. 1 mile a day. It's really not that hard. I had a friend of mine, you know, I actually, you know, was helping him lose weight. And I told him this. I was like, dude, okay. He's, you know, I'm like, dude, you gotta like stop eating this. You gotta stop eating that. And he's like, no, man, I gotta have my steak every day. I gotta have my filet mignon every day. I gotta have my glass of wine. I'm like, okay, fine. Can you at least give me 1 mile run every day then? If you're gonna eat a filet mignon and have wine every day, give me a mile. Just do a mile every day. And you know what? He tried. He was only able to do a quarter mile jog without getting winded. I'm like, dude, you're in bad fucking shape. If you can't even run a mile, just a jog, just in 12 fucking minutes. You tell me you can't run a mile in 12 fucking minutes? That's fucking pathetic. So really, we have an epidemic in North America. People are in such bad fucking shape. It's really bad. So just give me a mile a day. That's all I'm asking. Just doesn't have to be a sprint. You don't have to sprint a mile. Just a light jog. You can start out like doing a little jog, little walk, little jog, little walk. Just do a mile, okay? Whatever you have to do to get a mile down, that'd be the most beautiful thing, and it would benefit the fat loss. So in terms of when, you know, you should eat and should you do it on an empty stomach, listen, I was a runner, okay, for many years. I can't run on an empty stomach. But some people can. It just depends on the individual person. I can tell you universally, you should not eat before running. Because if you eat before running, you will throw it up. Your stomach cannot have shit in your stomach while you're running. All right? So I highly recommend, if you're going to go run, 2 hours before you run should be your last meal. It should be something that's easy to digest. Maybe some rice. So sweet potato, something light, you know. You want to stay away from acidy things. You want to stay away from heavy shit. You want to stay away from, don't eat like a fucking steak and then go try to run, okay? You're going to get sick. So you want to just have something light, you know, an hour and a half to 2 hours beforehand, and then you can run.
So, Steve, quickly, just to add on to what you're saying, if somebody out there, if you guys are not, you know, big into cardio, or, you know, you've never been a runner, you're not sure what to do, what I would suggest you do, you can download apps. There's tons of them. They're called Couch to 5K. It will take you from literally doing nothing, and it will work you up to where you can run 5K no problem. And it's very simple. Literally, you're going to listen to your music on your phone anyway. It's going to tell you when to run. It's going to tell you when to walk. It'll tell you when you're halfway. So when you're, you know, if you're running from home, when you get halfway and it tells you, you just turn around, and then you know you'll end when you get home. It's the easiest thing to do. So look up one of those, guys.
I'll say one more thing, and then we'll move into our next topic here. Another great suggestion is, let's say your goal is to do 60 minutes of cardio. You don't have to do all 60 minutes at once. You know, you could do 2 30-minute sessions. That way it becomes much easier. It also frees up your schedule. Or instead of doing all 60 minutes as running, do 30 minutes on the step mill, 30 minutes as running, you know, mix it up. That way it keeps it interesting. So our next topic is cruising on more than just testosterone. I'll keep this simple. My opinion is that testosterone replacement therapy should just be that, testosterone. If you want to blast and cruise, I think that's cool. You know, basically when you blast, you add different compounds and increase your testosterone dosage for, you know, a certain amount of time. Then when you're cruising, that should be just your TRT dosage. That basically lets your body reset, clears out your receptors, gets your health back before you do another blast. Basically, you blast 10 to 16 weeks. You'd cruise at least 10 to 16 weeks, and then you do another blast. But I don't think cruising, you know, I've heard guys cruising on Tren or, you know, cruising on like Test and EQ. Like, I don't think that's smart. I think when you cruise, it should just be testosterone.
I think this is an interesting one because these days cruising is like running like a gram of Test a week. You know, let's be honest with ourselves. That's what it is. And, you know, it's a shame that it's that this is happening and the trend is not good. Steroids are so easy to get. Steroids are so fucking cheap. 10 years ago, it was hard to get steroids and they were way more expensive than they are today. When I first bought my first steroid cycle, I remember it was maybe 2-3 times the price that shit's selling for today. And it was hard to get. There were very few websites and you had to order that shit from overseas and it would take you like fucking 2 months to get to you. Now, even overseas sources, you know, approved sources, they get that shit to you within a week, you know, and the prices are way less expensive. So, you know, we're a victim of our own accessibility today where guys want to run these crazy ass dosages because they can, but you're going to end up fucking your heart up. You're going to strain your heart. Think about it. If you're running more than a TRT dose of hormones, any hormone, you are straining your heart. So if you're going to cruise on 500, 750, or 1,000 milligrams of gear, you are going to cause damage to your heart long term. So, hey, if you want to do that, go ahead and do it. That's fine. Just don't complain when you're 35, 40, and you fall over and get a heart attack, like we are seeing guys getting already.
Yeah, I think for a lot of people, it's just an excuse to stay on. You know, they're asking the question, like, can I cruise with this and that, knowing they're going to do it anyway. They just want somebody to validate it. And honestly, like, if you're just going to cruise with, you know, a higher test dose than you should and add other compounds in, you might as well just stay on a full cycle for, you know, a lot longer than you should. You'll get to your goals quicker, and then maybe you'll actually let your body reset. But by running a cruise that's too high in other compounds, your body's not actually getting to, you know, detox isn't the right word, but it's not getting to reset the way that it should, like on a normal TRT dose. You're still, you know, you're straining everything. You're not allowing everything to get back to normal. Your prostate is going to be, you know, enlarged. And even on a TRT dose, you could still have that effect anyways. So think about if you're running a high test dose or you're adding in compounds, you know, on top of it, what kind of effect that's going to have. So yeah, I think, you know, legit TRT is really what I believe in. But if you're going to blast and cruise anyway, just because you want to, and you're afraid to lose gains or whatever it is, then it should be just a low test dose, you know, 150 milligrams a week, 200 max. I don't think you really need any more than that.
Let's get into what testosterone replacement therapy should be. It's basically when your natural testosterone production is suppressed and you're using a dosage of testosterone as a replacement dosage to get you into the normal range. You know, TRT should not be high dosages. If you get blood work done on TRT, your testosterone levels should be in the normal range. If they're in the higher end of the normal range, that's fine. And that's optimal, actually, you know, for anti-aging purposes, well-being, but they should still be in the normal range. You know, if you're getting, you know, your blood work done on your cruise dose and your testosterone level is like 1500, that's not TRT. That's staying on year round, you know? So a TRT dosage for most people, and again, this is individual, the only way to know for sure is through blood work. It's going to be about 100 to 200 milligrams per week of testosterone, and that should get your testosterone levels in the normal range. So our last topic is how not to be boring on a date. I'm going to give some simple advice because this is the biggest mistake I see a lot of guys in their mid-20s make, and that's they're on their phone during the date. I mean, it basically is a slap into the face to that girl. It shows that girl that, hey, I'm more interested in seeing what's on Instagram and Facebook than spending time with you. You know, I think a lot of guys are maybe doing it because they're nervous, or it's a habit or whatever. But if you're on a date, be on the date, be present, you know, turn off your phone, keep your phone on silent, focus on what you're doing, you know, don't, like, is there really anything that interesting on your phone? It just sets such a bad impression. And that girl, all she's thinking is, wow, this guy's such a dick. Like, he's more interested in scrolling through his Facebook feed than getting to know me. Steve, let's let you go, and then we'll let Matt go.
I've learned a lot about dating over the years. And one of the things that I've learned too, from, you know, reading a lot of books on this subject and seeing what these dating gurus have to say, a lot of times, guys, we are just boring on a date because all we want to talk about are sports, fitness, you know, working out, typical bullshit. But the thing is, like, to make yourself unique on a date, you have to be knowledgeable about shit, like world events. It's very important to know what's going on in the world. It's very important to know about history. It's very important to know about pop culture, like the shows that are on. I'm not a big TV person, but you better know some of these shows, like Game of Thrones, for example. You better know a little bit about that because a lot of people watch that shit. If you're on a date with a girl and she starts talking about Game of Thrones and you're sitting there like, what's Game of Thrones? She's going to think you're a fucking idiot, you know? At least, like, maybe watch a couple shows of it so you at least have a little knowledge of it. Know some music. Know about, you know, movies. Like, she's going to ask you, you know, what are some movies you've seen? You're like, oh, I haven't been to the movie theater in 5 years. She's going to look at you like you're a fucking idiot. Maybe go see a couple movies, you know. Get some knowledge on your belt. How about this? Here's a crazy thing to talk about. Talk about elephant's foot. Do any of you guys know what elephant's foot is? See, I mean, because this is history. This is shit you can have a conversation about. Elephant's foot is the most toxic thing in the world, and it's sitting in Chernobyl, okay, in East Europe. Basically, a guy took a picture of it using a mirror and fucking died 2 weeks later. That's how fucking toxic this thing is. And it's sitting in a basin in Chernobyl. This is shit. She's going to be like, wow, you're going to blow her mind. You're like, how the fuck do you know this shit? So this is stuff you can have a conversation about, you know, and it's like all kinds of stuff. There's about Tamamil. I talk about Tamamil. Tamamil was a drug after World War II that in Germany they gave to expectant mothers.
I don't think you should bring up drugs on a first date, Steve.
No. It was a prescription drug.
She's gonna think you're gonna try to like date rape her or something.
No, but this is history. Do some just like learn about history.
Okay,
learn
so about talking about Nazis and drugs. That's a good first date conversation.
It has nothing to do with Nazis. It was like in the 60s.
Okay.
It was just like a drug that they gave to expect
old people and drugs, even better.
Trevor, you have to be knowledgeable, man, about more than just fitness and this. Just trust me. Learn about weird shit to bring up on a date.
I'll teach her calculus. I'll teach her how to do derivatives by hand. That's a first date. That'll get her wheels turning. Matt, what are your thoughts? What are some tips on how to not be boring?
So you know what? I think the whole idea of talking about more than fitness is a great idea. And I actually saw a funny post about this earlier today. It was, they had a bunch of girls and they made them hug a guy that he could have been like a physique competitor, and they had to hug a guy that was dad bod. So he was probably, you know, 30% body fat, both no shirts on. You know, the physique guy was nice and shaved. The other guy's a hairy beast. And a huge number of the women, they were basically all picking the dad bod. And I guess the study behind it was that women have this preconception that fitness guys that are into fitness and look good like that are douchebags. So if you're only talking about fitness, you might come across the wrong way. So I think it's a great idea to, in general, just have different things to talk about. I don't know if it has to be, you know, super in-depth, you know, history or that kind of thing like Steve's bringing up. I think it's just have something to talk about, because if you don't, you're just going to sit there and you're going to be quiet. And then that's when the guy's going to grab the phone because he doesn't know what to do. And another thing not to do, don't drink too much, because you're just going to look like an idiot.
I just thought of something really funny. I totally see Steve watching Jeopardy with like a notepad and pen, and he's just like, oh, that one's gold. And he's like, write it down. He's got like 20 of them saved up for his first date. He'd be like, do you know what that island in 1972 was harvested by Christopher Columbus or whatever? And she's going to be like, no, what are you talking about? Oh, wrong answer. It was actually so-and-so.
Well, I mean, here's the thing. Like, how about reading a book? You know, how many books do you guys actually like read? Like,
honestly, yeah. Everything you're saying, Steve, is 100% true.
Yeah, but no, but I'm saying like, everybody, like, just go to a fucking bookstore and just go to a section, just randomly pick a section and grab a book and read it for an hour. Literally just like learn about shit. My point is, this sounds funny and stupid, but my point of this is make yourself more unique, because she's going out with 20 other guys. And if you go on a date just knowing about sports and fitness and eating and the typical guy shit, you're not going to set yourself differently. But if you go in there like armed with knowledge of shit, like you'll blow her away. She's going to leave that date thinking. I asked my girlfriend, I'm like, my girlfriend's like a fucking the hottest chick you'll ever see. She's like fucking gorgeous. She can get any guy she wants. I asked her, I'm like, why the fuck did you actually like go on the second date with me? And her answer was like, because you were different than the other guys. Because you were talking about shit on the date that no other guy ever talked about. She literally said, you talked about fasting. And it blew me away, because I've never heard anyone talk about fasting before. You talked about history. You talked about, you know, all kinds of weird things that no guy's ever talked to me about. Because every guy she's gone out with has talked about the same boring shit. So make yourself unique. I used to be like that. I used to be boring as fuck. I used to have, you know, just talk about the same typical shit. And, you know, like, I started learning that you really have to expand your knowledge past just the typical, like, stuff that guys know about to make yourself different. And I think that she'll leave that date saying, wow, this guy is, he knows a lot of shit, you know?
We're at our hour here. But I'll say one more thing, and what Steve said is 100% correct. My biggest problem, and I think a lot of men have this problem, is we don't shut up. We talk too much. I have made the mistake on other dates is, you know, she'll ask me a question, and I'm thinking, oh, this girl really likes me. So I go on and on and on. I talk for like 20, 30 minutes, and she barely gets a word in. It's the worst thing you could do. Learn how to listen. And this is kind of like a do as I say, not as I do, because you can tell I like to talk a lot and, you know, I like to voice my opinion. But ask about her, you know, it's going to really make her seem like, wow, what a genuine nice guy. He wanted to get to know me. You know, just be like, hey, what'd you do today? And she'll be like, oh, I took my dog for a walk this morning. Be like, oh, great. Like, what type of dog do you have? And then, you know, she'll tell you about her dog and like get to know about her dog. Ask her if she likes to cook. Ask her places that she's traveled. Ask her, you know, things like that, like get to know her. It's just going to be so much better. Matt, do you have any last tips before I close off the show?
No, I'm pretty boring.
I think that Matt's kind of true on that, because I noticed that too in dating, like people who've been in long marriages or long relationships then start dating again have that problem, because when you're in a long relationship, your nights are just like together, having dinner together, watching TV. You guys aren't really trying to
you
kind
basically of basically stop being fun, and you basically yes. a taxi service for your kid.
Yes, yes.
Your and life Trevor, revolves around your kids, and then you only talk about your kids.
What you said earlier, Trevor, is right in that, like, the thing you said before is correct, in that you have to, like, listen on a date, but it's also important to kind of, like, kind of ping pong the conversation back and forth a little bit without interrupting her. So you kind mm-hmm. of, like, you know, ping pong it back and forth, because otherwise it's going to be like awkward silence, and that's going to kill your date. Your date will be over.
Well, like you want to build to the conversation. So like ask her, you know, like she'll say like, do you like to cook? And she'll say, yes, I love to cook. You know, and she'll be like, okay, tell me the last thing you made. I'm curious, you know? And she'll say, oh, I made some butternut chicken soup. So butternut squash and chicken soup. She'll say something like that. And say, oh, you know what's really good with butternut squash? Roasted in the oven with a little bit of cinnamon on it, and it caramelizes, and it's sweet. It's like candy, you know. And she'll be like, oh, such a good idea. I didn't even think of that. You know, you can kind of like build on the conversation. Steve, I know you want to say something.
Yeah, I mean, that's good. Talk about recipes. Like if she likes to cook, talk about recipes. But don't be an extremist on the date, because I noticed this a lot. Like we tend to be extremists. Like let's say she starts bringing up chocolate and you're like, oh, I don't eat chocolate. You just fold your hands. I don't eat chocolate. She's going to be like, what the fuck's wrong with this guy? Don't be such an extremist where you don't eat chocolate or you don't eat this or you don't eat that. Just be like, if she asks you, you know, what do you like to eat? But, oh, I have a balanced diet, blah, 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 blah. You don't need to be, women hate that shit.
I don't consume dairy. I don't consume soy. I don't consume gluten. I don't consume anything that has a shadow. I don't consume.
Yeah, just the best thing. I get asked that question all the time. I just say, I eat a balanced diet, you know, but that's all I say. Like, you don't want to, like, sit there and, like, list off shit you don't eat, because that's a huge turnoff. Like, she's going to be like, man, I can't. How am I supposed to date this guy? We can't go to a restaurant. We can't go on vacation and eat stuff. I can't take him to my parents' house for dinner on Thanksgiving because he's not going to eat turkey.
This is one of my favorite recipes to make. I'd love to cook it for you for dinner. Oh, I can't eat that. I mean, that's got gluten in it. That's got dairy. Like, are you trying to kill me? What are you doing here? Yeah, no, I hear you.
Yeah, don't be an extreme. Even if you're like a vegan or vegetarian or something, save that for later on. She'll get to know you. She'll figure out that stuff. So don't be extremist with anything. Don't be like, oh, I go to the gym 7 days a week, 5 o'clock. Oh, I can't make the date because my gym's at 5 o'clock, so I can't see you at 5:30. She's gonna be like, man, this guy, like, you cannot be an extremist. Women hate that shit.
Okay, we're over an hour here, so I'm gonna close off the show. So basically what we're saying here is lie. We're all extremists. Most of us listening to the show have very strict diets. We exercise 7 days a week. Lie, get a ring on her finger, and then tell her the truth. So this has been another great episode of Evolutionary Radio. Our next episode, we have the new moderator on, Mobster. I'm really excited to get him on. He's got quite a few impressive powerlifting titles. I've been speaking to him a little bit, just emailing back and forth. The guy knows how to train. He knows how to get strong. So this is going to be a good episode. Definitely tune in the next episode if you are looking to get into powerlifting or you're just looking to gain size and strength. For your host, Trevor Kuritzen, for my co-host, Steve Smee, for my second co-host, Matt, also known as Masonic Bodybuilder on the evolutionary.org forums, it's been another episode of Evolutionary Radio. Live your life, look good doing it. Thanks for listening. Mm-hmm.